Pop Merrill turned the sign which hung in his door from open to closed at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon, slipped himself behind the wheel of his 1959 Chevrolet, which had been for years perfectly maintained at Sonny's Texaco at absolutely no cost at all, the fallout of another little loan, and Sonny Jacket another town fellow who would prefer hot coals pressed against the soles of his feet to admitting that he not only knew but was deeply indebted to Pop Merrill, who had gotten him out of a desperate scrape over in New Hampshire in 69, and took himself up to Lewiston, a city he hated because it seemed to him that there were only two streets in the whole town, maybe three, that weren't one ways. He arrived, as he always did, when Lewiston and only Lewiston would do, not by driving to it, but arriving somewhere near it, and then spiraling slowly inward along those beshitted one-way streets, until he reckoned he was as close as he could get, and then walking the rest of the way. A tall, thin man, with a bald head, rimless specs, clean khaki pants with creases and cuffs, and a blue workman's shirt buttoned right up to the collar. There was a sign in the window of Twin City Camera and Video that showed a cartoon man who appeared to be battling a huge tangle of movie film and losing. The fellow looked just about ready to blow his stack. The words over and under the picture read, "Tired of fighting? We transfer your 8mm movies, snapshots too, onto videotape." Just another goddamn gadget, Pop thought, opening the door and going in. World's dying of them. But he was one of those people, world's dying of them, not at all above using what he disparaged if it proved expedient. He spoke briefly with the clerk. The clerk got the proprietor. They had known each other for many years, probably since Homer sailed the wine dark sea, some wits might have said. The proprietor invited Pop into the back room, where they shared a nip.
"That's a goddamn strange bunch of photos," the proprietor said.
"Hey, Al.
The videotape on me doesn't seem stranger."
"I bet so."
"Is that all you've got to say?"
"Hey, Al.
"Fuck you, then,"
the proprietor said, and they both cackled their shrill old man's cackles. Behind the counter, the clerk winced. Pop left 20 minutes later with two items, a videocassette and a brand-new Polaroid Sun 660, still in its box. When he got back to the shop, he called Kevin's house. He was not surprised when it was John Delavan who answered.
"If you've been fucking my boy over, I'll kill you, you old snake," John Delavan said without preamble, and distantly Pop could hear the boy's wounded cry,
"Dad!" Pop's lips skinned back from his teeth, crooked, eroded, pipe yellow, but his own by the bald-headed Christ. And if Kevin had seen him in that moment, he would have done more than wonder if maybe Pop Merrill was something other than the Castle Rock version of the kindly old sage of the Cracker Barrel. He would have known.
"Now, John," he said, "I've been trying to help your boy with that camera. That's all in the world I've been trying to do."
He paused.
"Just like that one time I gave you a help when you got a little too proud of the 76ers, is what I mean to say."
A thundering silence from John Delavan's end of the line, which meant he had plenty to say on that subject, but the kiddo was in the room, and that was as good as a gag.
"Now, your kid don't know nothing about that,"
Pop said, that nasty grin broadening in the tick-tock shadows of the Emporium Galorium, where the dominant smells were old magazines and mouse turds.
"I told him it wasn't none of his business, just like I told him that this business here was. I wouldn't have even brought up that bet if I knew another way to get you here, is what I mean to say. And you ought to see what I've got, John, because if you don't, you won't understand why the boy wants to smash that camera you bought him."
"Smash it?
And why I think it's a hell of a good idea. Now, are you going to come down here with him or not?"
"I'm not in Portland, am I, damn it?"
"Never mind the closed sign on the door,"
Pop said in the serene tone of a man who has been getting his own way for many years and expects to go right on getting it for many more. "Just knock."
"Who in the hell gave my boy your name, Merrill?"
"I didn't ask him,"
Pop said, in that same infuriatingly serene tone of voice, and hung up the telephone into the empty shop.
"All I know is that he came, just like they always do."
While he waited, He took the Sun 660 he had bought in Lewiston out of its box and buried the box deep in the trash can beside his work table. He looked at the camera thoughtfully, then loaded the 4-picture starter pack that came with the camera. With that done, he unfolded the body of the camera, exposing the lens. The red light to the left of the lightning bolt shape came on briefly, and then the green one began to stutter. Pop was not very surprised to find he was filled with trepidation. Well, he thought, God hates a coward, and pushed the shutter release. The clutter of the Emporium Glorium's barn-like interior was bathed in an instant of merciless and improbable white light. The camera made its squeegee little whine and spat out what would be a Polaroid picture, perfectly adequate, but somehow lacking. A picture that was all surfaces, depicting a world where ships undoubtedly would sail off the fuming and monster-rattled edge of the Earth if they went far enough west. Pop watched it with the same mesmerized expression Clan Delavan had worn as it waited for Kevin's first picture to develop. He told himself this camera would not do the same thing. Of course not, but he was stiff and wiry with tension just the same. And tough old bird or not, if a random board had creaked in the place just then, he almost certainly would have cried out. But no board did creak, and when the picture developed, it showed only what it was supposed to show. Clocks assembled, clocks in pieces, toasters, stacks of magazines tied with twine, lamps with shades so horrible only women of the British upper classes could truly love them, shelves of quarter paperbacks, 6 for a buck, with titles like After Dark, My Sweet, and Fire in the Flesh, and The Brass Cupcake. And in the distant background, the dusty front window. You could read the letters E-M-P-O-R backward before the bulky silhouette of a bureau blocked off the rest. No hulking creature from beyond the grave, no knife-wielding doll in blue overalls, just a camera. He supposed the whim, which had caused him to take a picture in the first place, just to see, showed how deeply this thing had worked its way under his skin. Pop sighed and buried the photograph in the trash can. He opened the wide drawer of the work table and took out a small hammer. He held the camera firmly in his left hand and then swung the hammer on a short arc through the dusty tick-tock air. He didn't use a great deal of force. There was no need. Nobody took any pride in workmanship anymore. They talked about the wonders of modern science, synthetics, new alloys, polymers, Christ knew what. It didn't matter. Snot. That was what everything was really made out of these days. You didn't have to work very hard to bust a camera that was made of snot. The lens shattered. Shards of plastic flew from around it, and that reminded Pop of something else. Had it been the left or right side? He frowned. Left, he thought. They wouldn't notice anyway, or remember which side themselves if they did. You could damn near tape that to the bank. But Pop hadn't feathered his nest with damn ears. It was wise to be prepared. Always wise. He replaced the hammer, used a small brush to sweep the broken chunks of glass and plastic off the table and onto the floor, then returned the brush and took out a grease pencil with a fine tip and an X-Acto knife. He drew what he thought was the approximate shape of the piece of plastic which had broken off Kevin Delavan's Sun when Meg knocked it on the floor, then used the X-Acto to carve along the lines. When he thought he had dug deep enough into the plastic, he put the X-Acto back in the drawer, and then knocked the Polaroid off the work table. What had happened once ought to happen again, especially with the fault lines he had pre-carved. It worked pretty slick, too. He examined the camera, which now had a chunk of plastic gone from the side, as well as a busted lens, nodded, and placed it in a deep shadow under the work table. Then he found the piece of plastic that had split off from the camera and buried it in the trash along with the box and the single exposure he had taken. Now there was nothing to do but wait for the Delavans to arrive. Pop took the video cassette upstairs to the cramped little apartment where he lived. He put it on top of the VCR he had bought to watch the fuck movies you could buy nowadays, then sat down to read the paper. He saw there had been a plane crash in Pakistan. 130 people killed. Goddamn fools are always getting themselves killed, Pop thought. But that was all right. A few less woggies in the world was a good thing all around. Then he turned to the sports to see how the Red Sox had done. They still had a good chance of winning the Eastern Division.